And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Thursday, December 7th, 1941 to 2017, 76 years after Pearl Harbor. It's an amazing thing. And how many people see parallels to the run-up to and the Pearl Harbor, the run-up to Pearl Harbor and Pearl Harbor today, to what's happening today? I see a lot of parallels. In fact, it was during my morning show that I addressed some of those, and the foreknowledge that is the exposure of the foreknowledge. It's interesting that much of the materials from the cables, Japanese cables, intercepts by the United States as well as England at that time are still classified. And what we do know about the purple codes, the machines, the encryption machines and such, there was foreknowledge. But commemorating 76 years ago the deaths of many servicemen, many people at Pearl Harbor in what was the hinge moment in time that brought us into World War II. Planned? I do suspect. But tonight we've got a great program for you. Steve Quayle and Aaron Brickman are going to be talking about cryptocurrencies, something that is over the head of many people, I do suspect. It's over my head. I admit it. I don't understand it. I want clarification.
You know, I'm kicking myself.
Well,
I mean, Bitcoin's at $17,000 just a few months ago.
That's meaningless to me.
Eric and I were talking about it. It was at $5,000. And I remember when it was cheap, like the dollar cheap.
But it's meaningless to me because what is it?
We'll get into that.
And that's why we have Mr. Brickman and Mr. Quayle coming on to talk about that.
But first, we're going to bring you a quick word from Alan Riggs, the founder and owner of Greenovative, greenovative.com. Alan, welcome back to the Hagmann Report.
Good evening, gentlemen.
What's going on in your world, Alan? I know we got the 30% sale that you've been running with promo code Hagmann. How's that been going?
It's going well, and I'm getting a lot of phone calls and a fair number of orders from your audience, and congratulations on your first and second live daily shows. And on your first show, you had Coach Dave, and about 3 weeks ago, one of my customers ordered five of our mission packs and sent them off to Coach Dave. So it was good that you guys had them on. It's great.
Well, that's great to hear, Alan. What are some of the things that is going on over at Greenovative?
We're working really hard to get all the orders out. We're trying to make sure that we have enough so that everybody can get theirs by Christmas. And I put out the word that if you order by the 10th, we'll guarantee that they'll be there by Christmas. And if I work a little faster or maybe get a few more ahead, maybe I can slide that a couple of days. I don't know yet, but we're working hard on it. A lot of response, a lot of folks saying, hey, I really like this. Are you thinking about making one of these? And I'm going to go tell my pastor that we need to send one to our missionaries. Just a lot of positive feedback. I thoroughly enjoy working with the Hagmann loyalists.
Well, we enjoy working with you too, Alan. And the mission pack, how much is it 15% off the mission pack right now?
It is. It's 30% off. It's 30% off everything in the store right now.
Well, that's fantastic. And folks, take advantage of the offer from Alan Riggs, 30% off. That's the biggest sale that they have ever done exclusively for Hagmann Report listeners. And if you order by December 10th, Alan said he can get it to you by Christmas, and orders after that, I guess it's touch and go. But take advantage of the discounts, 30% off everything in the store using promo code Hagmann. Alan, thank you so much for coming on tonight, and thank you for the wonderful discounts and sales that you have over at Greenovative. Why don't you give out the phone number people can call if they have questions or if they want to order?
The phone number is it's area code 321-638-4885, and you can call me. I'd be happy to answer your questions. And just one other little tidbit I'd like to leave with you is your loyalists and some other folks have helped us send out a total of 75 Mission Pack units to people in need from the hurricanes.
Well, that's awesome.
Well, let's see if we can't double that, folks. Again,
that would be great.
And these are going to the hurricane victims and those people in need. Hey, let's see if we can't get more of that. What a great investment. Can't think of any better place to put your money to help others. And these do indeed help others. Very well. Very good. Thank you so much, sir. Wow. That's fantastic.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's great to have you, Alan. And again, thank you for the awesome discounts, folks. Go to greenovative.com. That's 30% off everything in the store, including the mission packs. And if you do want to help out, Puerto Rico still without power, I'm sure they could use some mission packs down there. So if you're feeling charitable, go to Greenovative and try to get some of those packs to some people down in Puerto Rico who could really use them. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
All right.
Now, we saw very quickly, just want to let everyone know, look, we are monitoring the congressional hearings. Of course, the FBI Director Chris Wray testified before Congress for the first time since Donald Trump.
Did you watch
described
that?
I've got it on, I've recorded all of the testimony that was open to, that was open. Now,
I watched about an hour this morning.
Okay.
And it was comical. A lot of it was.
Well, yeah, and we have to go through it. I'm waiting for the transcripts as well, but understand that we're following this, all right? So we're going to have more commentary on this at another time. But in the meantime, Steve Quayle, stevequayle.com, as well as Aaron Brickman. Cryptocurrencies, how many of us really understand what cryptocurrencies are what's involved in this? I don't. I'll tell you right now, I don't have a clue. Bitcoin to me is a mystery. So, and we've gotten so many emails asking about our thoughts on cryptocurrencies. And, in talking with Steve Quayle rose up to the challenge and thankfully, bringing with him Aaron Brickman, to talk about this very issue, hopefully informing others about what's going on. With that, Steve Quayle. Steve, thanks so much for coming on and really filling a void, man. Filling an informational void. Thank you. I'm going to give it to you.
Well, thank you, Doug. And I'm the second to admit that, obviously, as a guy that coined the term, if you can't touch it, you don't own it. I also am also aware of the fact that technology is so far advanced from where most people even can begin to grasp it that I wanted my expert friend, Aaron Brickman, to come on. Now, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, about Aaron. Number one, he's a Ranger, Army Ranger, First Ranger Battalion out of Savannah, Georgia. And I've known Aaron for a decade, and I met him in Florida. He's a private investor and businessman, very successful. He pioneered, along with his wife, they pioneered a business model for internet startup companies from 2002 to 2010. And upon selling his company, he retired, actually their company, they retired to the Caribbean and then Florida for a few years. And I remember talking to Aaron about moving down there and joining him. But in 2014, he and his wife began building a new internet company that will be platform-based. His formal education is in history and politics. And by the way, he reads my stuff. His experience now centers around trading financial products, and he understands this stuff like no one. Listen, there are smart people out there, some well-known personalities on Bitcoin. One of them sent me an email saying, you missed the boat. Well, just in talking to Aaron this morning, actually I have it on my phone, Doug, at 8:31 when Aaron and I started talking about tonight's show, Bitcoin went from 15,800 a coin to 17,000 while we were on the phone. That's dollars per coin. It started out in less than a dollar per coin. But I want to bring Aaron on. I'm not going to interfere or interject anything unless he needs a break, because I frankly am getting the same questions, Doug, you are. And I don't know. Now, I want to make it clear, Aaron is also a believer in financial instruments in hand, meaning gold, precious metals. So this isn't a guy that's going to tell you to dump all your gold and silver and go buy Bitcoin. But in order for us to even understand the way the future is heading, I can say this. The guys I've heard explain it are on level one, and Aaron's going to bring us to level three. So, Aaron, thank you for coming on tonight, and just take it away. If you need a break, hand it back to me, but I'm going on silent running because I need to learn also.
Well, thank you, Doug and Joe and Steve. And I don't even know where to begin, but I want to begin by just thanking Doug and Joe for what you do on the radio and for your program. And I listened to it. I appreciate it. I cannot even comprehend. And I don't think all of us who, are the listening audience and don't do what you guys do every night, I don't think we can truly appreciate and comprehend the amount of work and sacrifice that goes into what you guys do. And
well, thank you, Aaron Brickman. Thank you so much for that. For some reason, your audio cut out there. I don't know if people caught that, but thank you. It's a labor of love, to be certain, and we're in this for the long haul, and we appreciate your contribution of information for our listeners. And we just, I'll tell you what, we're going to stand back and sit back and take notes ourselves. So with that, Mr. Brickman, again, the pleasure, honor is all of ours, and have at it, sir. You can start off by explaining to people what, when people say Bitcoin to me, I mean, my eyes glaze over. I don't know what cryptocurrencies is. So you're going to have to kind of go to a kindergarten level, start there and work up.
Did we lose him, Doug?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. Dead air is not good for the radio.
It sounds like we did lose him, Steve. We'll get him back.
All right. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the deal.
Here we are.
All right. Well, I guess they didn't like me just thanking Doug and Joe for their service.
We heard that, but then your phone cut out. Are you okay? Are you in a place where you're...
I'm sitting in my office, and let's pick up where I left off. I just wanted to thank you, Doug and Joe, for your service. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate Steve. You know, Steve knows me like you said for about a decade, and I am the last guy that wants to be on the radio. But I know that Steve has spoken into my life over the years, and I believe that this was timely, and this is an unction by the Lord. So I will respond to that. But I just wanted to let you guys know that this is going to be difficult for me. So if I sound, I trust the Lord is going to speak through me. This is not going to be a 3-hour lecture, and I don't want it to be that. The Lord has put a lot in me, but it really works best when we have a conversation and we have a dialogue and we go back and forth. And I really want to do that this evening. I'm sure all three of you guys have questions, whether it's from the audience or whether it's personal questions. And I think that's the best way to approach this subject is if we go down that route. I'll say some opening statements and maybe spend a little bit of time diving in to give you guys a general understanding. I want to start off by saying that I am not a developer. I am not a programmer. I work with them. I hire them. I have in-depth conversations with them. And when I talk to them, I feel like I'm the idiot. I want to make it clear to the audience that I'm not coming on here to be the expert to tell you the way it is. I think it's very important for all of us to be open to truth, to be open to rebuke, to be open and admit when we don't understand something. And I think that, I might know more than Steve, but there are plenty of guys that know more than me when it comes to this topic. So I do not want to And there might be guys, women in the audience listening tonight that know more of a technical nature than I do, and that is fine. I really want to be clear with the audience that I come with a macro understanding, but having built technology companies, and so what's been frustrating for me is to hear most of what the public has been told from both sides of the argument about cryptocurrency is just fear mongering. It's not based. When I have these conversations with Steve all the time, it's really just not. I kind of get frustrated. I'm like, where did they come up with that? And maybe that's stuff that you guys will ask, you know, articles or questions that you guys will point to. It seems that the more popular cryptocurrency becomes, the more insane the accusations from both camps. Does that sound like a good plan for the evening, guys?
It does, especially. I mean, consider you're talking to a guy, me, that still has trouble understanding the concept of a fax machine. Okay, so yes. So let's dive in, and we'll have a conversation. Indeed.
Okay, so let's, I appreciate that, Doug. And hey, by the way, I still haven't figured out how my microwave works. So, you know, at a technical level, God bless Steve, because he starts talking the tech stuff and the science behind a lot of the new technology. And, he teaches me in that regard. So, but I'll do the best I can. And hopefully, you know, I'm really expecting that the Lord, my expectation for this evening is not that we achieve at some understanding of that we're not going to understand this in totality. And let me say that I'm going to make some comparisons in to the .com one bubble, the technology revolution that was ushered in the late 90s and early 2000s. But I'm also going to make reference to the technology innovation of electricity at the turn of the prior century going into the 20th century. And then we're going to make reference to the Industrial Revolution, because each of these three time periods are instructive to what we're going through right now. So when people say that they don't understand what Bitcoin is, rest assured that most of the people involved in cryptocurrency don't understand what they're about to unleash. Okay? Some of them do. Okay? Most of the developers do not. Okay? Most technology developers, in my humble opinion and my experience, are the technicians. They're down in what we would call the weeds. And they're not at 30,000 feet surveying the last 500 years and where we're headed. And that's not a slight against the developers. That's just the way their brain works, and that's the gifting that God's given them, the technical nature of it. So let's dive in. I'm gonna give you a quick explanation of what Bitcoin is, but let me start by saying you can spend, and we all as society will spend the next couple of years learning about what cryptocurrency is. Anybody that claims to have a definitive authority on cryptocurrency and where we're headed is not telling you the truth. I would liken it to the best and the brightest minds out of Silicon Valley in the late 90s were talking about the internet could not in their wildest dreams conceive of 2017. Okay? Life is messy. It's dynamic. You're dealing with 7 billion people. You're dealing with all types of, you can set in motion trends. You can tap into historical forces that are at play. But life gets messy and it's multidimensional, and before you know it, the internet doesn't look like what they intended it to be, both good and bad. And so when people come along and say cryptocurrency is this and it is going to be this in 10 years, rest assured history will show that if you can imagine it, if you can envision it, if you say that's it, that's not it. It might be part of it, but it is not it in totality. So I think all of us are seeing through a glass dimly, darkly, and we're gonna, and that's, to me, as an entrepreneur, where the fun is. I enjoy my life. I enjoy the time that we're alive in because it is extremely dynamic. It's full of change, but in that tumult, in that mix, that's where I believe God is raising up men and women who are going to set a new standard. We're going to embrace certain forms of technology. And I think you're seeing that even over the last 20 years with the internet and what they intended it to be and really what it has become. And we'll probably revisit that on our way into cryptocurrency and where the blockchain is really taking humanity. So what is Bitcoin? Okay, let's just jump right in. We've been told that Bitcoin is digital money. Maybe some people have heard that it's really cryptocurrency. They've heard a little bit about the blockchain. Maybe they heard it was a platform. Maybe they heard it was a company. Maybe they heard it was like the internet. We've heard all this stuff. And I would submit to you that it's all of that, but it's a lot more, and this is like peeling back an onion. We're going to be peeling layers, and that's why, frankly, in 3 hours, we will scratch at the surface of the technology. So we're going to dive in, and then we're going to try and not get sucked into the details, because you really lose sight of a lot of things as you get deeper into the details. We're going to try and maintain some kind of big picture approach to it. So, what is the blockchain? How did it come into existence? Bitcoin came into existence in October of 2008 during the financial crisis. Okay, it was a white paper that was written by a person who was calling themselves Satoshi Nakamoto. This person published a white paper that posited, and this white paper can be searched online, it can be downloaded. It's like 7 pages. Okay, so this is not a long read. What will impress you is that I've never seen such innovation, such groundbreaking ideas so succinctly put out in such a small piece of paper. It was radical what he was proposing. So what did he propose? He published a white paper that posited that he had found a way to create a decentralized network, which is a very important term we'll get to. Found a way to create a decentralized network that could achieve consensus and agreement among all the parties without any controlling authority. Needless to say, that was outrageously radical. And it still is radical. It's going to be radical 100 years from now. Okay? Let's say it another way. How do you get a group of people together, achieve consensus and agreement with no controlling authority? Let's take it into finance. Because the first application of this, and this was proposed in the white paper, was banking, okay? Which is why Bitcoin a lot of times has become synonymous with the blockchain. But I hope that you'll understand at the end of this conversation that Bitcoin, the money application, is just, let's call it, the first app of what the blockchain is going to roll out. Okay? So let's take finance, banking, and let's ask a simple question. Why do we have third-party intermediaries in all aspects of financial life? What would be an intermediary? Credit card company is an intermediary between a buyer and a seller. Okay? Banking is an intermediary between you and your money. Banking as a loan officer, as a loan facility, okay, between you and the other party. How about Wall Street, okay? Wall Street is a third party between you purchasing a stock and the company, or it's a third party between a company that's wanting to go public and raise funds from prospective buyers, okay? What he was proposing was eliminate the entire financial intermediary system from humanity, okay? And if you don't think that that's radical or that it's going to upset the powers that be and that they're going to go quietly into the night, then you haven't been paying attention to anything in the last 20 years and what they're doing and the fight that's already taking place with communications and with alternative media. This is going to make the fight with alternative media pale in comparison. Pale. We're talking about taking away their command and control structure of the planet through the financial system. We'll continue. You guys tracking with me?
Decentralization of everything is what you're saying.
Everything.
Yeah, taking out the middleman. Here's the thing that Aaron helped me, okay? We all who have been in the financial industry, you know, even people that buy metals from me, precious metals, they obviously send me a check or they send me a bank wire. What this does is it totally takes out the middleman, totally takes out the institutions, and allows me to go one-on-one with anybody, and there's nobody that's keeping track of it, so it provides, at this point, the ultimate cover. In the third hour, just so everybody knows, I've asked Aaron to address the issues of security, the issues of what the powers that be will do to shut it down, all that stuff. And then he'll tell you how those concerns, well, valid, don't apply. So, Aaron, continue on because, and again, people are tracking with you. So, okay. You know, just continue on.
All right. So he asked, why do we have third-party intermediaries in the financial realm? Okay. And we're talking banking going back 1,000 years, at least back to, you know, 600-700 years to the Italians. They are there to ensure trust and verification among the two primary parties that are conducting a financial agreement. Okay? For example, credit card companies. Credit card companies are there so that that I have a recourse as a reseller. If I'm a retailer, I have a recourse if there's a fraudulent charge, okay? All of us can contact our credit card company. They have a balance, a ledger, okay? They're going to flag charges that are questionable. That's one of the things that they're performing. So it's trust, okay? In the banking system, really what they're doing, especially now that we've moved to a digital age in money is being traded around the world digitally, is they're there basically to watch the ledger. You know, so we don't get into what's called a double spend problem. Did Aaron Brickman have the funds in his account when he paid Steve digitally? Okay? If nobody's keeping track of that ledger and we're dealing with digital, we've moved out of cash, okay, a long time ago, and now we're dealing with whether it's a check, and they were doing this function with checks, okay, so this isn't just electron. Once we moved past cash, and we're writing checks, credit cards, letters of credit, all this form, okay, where we've taken money and made an abstraction of it, okay, at that point, somebody has to be watching the ledger. Okay, so that's what they were originally, that was the original intent of financial intermediaries. Okay, so if we remove them, and this is the central question, and this is going to be the central question that the world is going to be wrestling with How do we ensure that there is trust and validation among the parties within the network? Okay. Satoshi's proposal was that instead of a bank or a credit card company recording every transaction in one central ledger, all the users within the network would record all the transactions at the same time. As a result, any attempt to fool the community would be noticed by the community, and the payment within the community would be rejected. No one user, no government, no bank could force a fee on a payment system or control its flow or prevent people from accessing that payment channel. The result is a cheaper, you've eliminated the middleman, you've eliminated the banks, you've eliminated the third party that's taking their fees, that's taking their cuts, that's charging outrageous amounts on lending, that's charging late fees, okay? All of this, you eliminate that, so the result is a cheaper, quicker, easier way to spend money across the entire planet. It transcends borders, okay? The blockchain is a decentralized network that allows transactions on a direct peer-to-peer level without any third-party intermediary. So, I have a Bitcoin address. I have Bitcoin. I have a Bitcoin address. I want to send Steve one Bitcoin. It doesn't matter a Bitcoin. It is $100. And whatever I want to send him, I put it into my address. I put his address. I hit send, and instantly on the Lightning Network, on some of these other networks, they're increasing the speed. Right now, Bitcoin, maybe it's 5, 10 minutes. They're getting it down to seconds. Some of the other networks we'll talk about are literally doing it in less than a second. The money's there. No fees, other than, I mean, we're talking a nominal transaction fee on the network. And when I say nominal transaction fee, right now with banks, obviously, let's just stop and talk about banks. How cumbersome is that with a traditional bank right now? Okay. They're going to ask me, why am I sending him that money? They're going to maybe approve it, maybe not. They're going to take a fee. It's going to be a huge hassle to send it to him with a wire going into the physical bank. I'm going to wait a day, 2 days, 3 days. It's an international wire, maybe even longer. If it needs to be converted into the local currency, there's going to be transaction fees, finance charges. On the recipient's end, they're probably going to get an incoming wire fee. Okay, so the fees add up quickly, as we all know.
And government oversight.
And the government oversight. Let's stop and get deep into this and what this is doing. Right now, we have the SWIFT payment system. The Chinese are building their alternative SWIFT payment system, okay, called the CHIP system, okay? We obviously see what the BRIC nations are doing. We know what Russia and China is doing. We know that the world is trying to build alternative systems, because if they don't agree with the West, and primarily the United States, we can embargo them. We can cut them out of the entire financial realm of the world. And yet Bitcoin says, no, you can't. No, you can't. It does not go through any central authority. Okay? I'm going to continue. We're going to come back to that. Unless you guys want to go deeper.
No. That's fine. Well, I think, yeah, just continue on.
So blockchain is a distributed ledger technology. Okay. I want to make this clear, because a lot of people are thinking, and let's just call it what it is, a lot of people are thinking that this is the mark of the beast. Okay. And I don't fault them for thinking that. Okay. It sounds pretty scary. We're now talking about borders coming down, governments coming down. Big difference is when you look at the beast system in Revelation, we're talking about extreme control, ultimate control, right? No buying, no selling. This is the antithesis of the beast system. Okay? And the more you understand the technology and what they're doing, the more, yes, it's going, what this is about to do is to liberate people. Okay? And this is an ongoing process that I want to get into that's been taking place since the Industrial Revolution. So let's get through the blockchain, and I want to talk about the Industrial Revolution and the revolution that this is about to kickstart. Because make no mistake, the anxiety that people are feeling in their life, the pace of change that is taking place around the planet, is revolutionary. And I believe that people are sensing intuitively the revolution that is taking place. People, when I say revolution, it does not have to be bloody. That's one way history can play it out. But I mean it in a deeper, more fundamental, more profound sense, which we'll talk about. Blockchain, I want to recover this, is a distributed ledger technology. In the white paper, Satoshi was very clear that it was an extreme rejection of government-guaranteed money and banking control, okay? He envisioned people spending money without friction, without intermediaries, without regulation, or the need to know or trust other parties, okay? As we discussed earlier, the central problem with electronic cash is the double spend problem, okay? And so if nobody was watching the ledger, obviously I could send money to Steve, and nobody was watching my ledger, I could go spend, I could double spend and send that same money to Doug, and hey, if there was no ledger, how would they know in an electronic era that I didn't have that money?
So Aaron, let me ask you a question. Let's say a guy's got, you know, 100 bitcoins, which is worth about $170,000. Whatever the math works out. Yeah, I think it would be that, wouldn't it? Yeah, one bitcoin, 17,000. So, yeah,
right.
It'd be 170,000. Does that appear on the, and I don't know the answer to this, ladies and gentlemen, does that appear not by name, but by a number or an account so people can always, do they monitor the amount that's in the account that they can check off against?
The only thing that is taking place inside these blocks, and the reason it's called a blockchain is because that what happens is you have an address. Now, here's the thing. You can have a billion addresses, and I'm not kidding. You can create endless addresses, okay? So you don't have a name tied to an address. I can create a billion addresses. In fact, every time I spend something and send something out, I can create a new address, okay? And that's good to keep in mind if you're trying to do forensic analysis, because this is going to create havoc when billions of people are creating trillions of addresses, okay? So this is not like a typical bank. You have one address. All that's being recorded on the blockchain in real time is that this address has an output of this value of Bitcoin, or an input. Actually, it would be an output of this value. So let's say an output of 10 Bitcoins, and this address is receiving said 10 Bitcoins. That's it. There's no names. There's no geographic boundaries. It doesn't know if it's going to China. It doesn't know where it's going. Okay? And this is being broadcast on the network. Okay? What is the network? Maybe we should just jump in here and say how, and maybe get into a little detail of how this is working. What this is that this is a protocol, okay? It is a TCP/IP, which is what the internet is running on. That's a protocol, okay? And what's revolutionary about that is that if you have are receiving the internet on a protocol, okay, there's not a central, let's go back in time and go back. Look. The internet is a DARPA project, right? I mean, it comes out of that evolution. And what was it created to do? It was created to be a communications platform because there was no central authority. There was no central command location that could be taken out and take down the entire network, right? Okay, so it was be, it was going to be able to survive a nuclear attack. Okay, we get the internet, you know, that brings us the internet. The blockchain is a protocol. What is a protocol? It's just a set of rules. It's a language. Okay, and you, if you're speaking that language on the network, and there's others that are listening to that language on the network, they can communicate back and forth. The blockchain is, there is no, it's not a place. It's not a website. It's not a, it's not a physical property. It's not even a location. Okay. The blockchain is like saying shortwave radio. Okay. And so if I'm speaking in the blockchain runs on top of the internet. It runs on top of the TCP/IP protocol, which is the internet. Okay? So, there's only one way to take down the blockchain. Take down the entire net. If, well, let me say how it works, and then we're going to talk about what China just attempted to do last month, or 2 months ago. The blockchain, so the blockchain is a language, it's a protocol. If you meet those conditions and you're speaking that language, then it executes. It's just software. It executes it. Okay? So you're broadcasting. You put out, I put out an intention through a client that on the computer that I'm going to send my address, X amount of Bitcoin, to Steve Quayle's address. It gets broadcast. There are, on the internet, there are miners, and you've heard that term mining. They're mining Bitcoin. What are they doing? What miners are doing is they are grabbing out of a mine pool, so all these transactions are being broadcast, and they're going into a holding area. The miners, and I could be a miner, Doug, you could be a miner if you had the device, Steve could be a miner. All the miners are doing is they're looking into the pool, they're grabbing the content of the transactions, and they begin putting them into what's called a block. Okay, there's some cryptography. In fact, there's a lot of cryptography that's going on, a lot of hashing, some really insane, you know, algorithmic and high math stuff is taking place that frankly blows my mind.
Hey, Aaron? Aaron?
Yes.
Yeah, let me interrupt you because this is critical. Are you saying then that the miners can... They're looking for a pool of money that the claimant hasn't received, and they steal that?
No, what I'm saying is that the miners are fulfilling the function of banks being the ledger.
Okay? Gotcha. Just, I
we
didn't
eliminated
understand that,
the bank. So now the community is looking at the address and the amount and putting it together, and they are basically comparing it. And this is a dumbed down version. You know, they are all working on it together and they are reaching consensus. Okay. And this is very important so that if theoretically anybody hacked into the block, it would have to, when they changed it, it would immediately get flagged because it's not what everybody else mined. Okay. They would see the error in the data. Okay, there's no central authority doing it. We're all doing it. Okay, when that's done, it's encrypted, it's sealed, it's time-stamped, there's a hash attached to it, it's in a block. A block is done every 10 minutes. Now, this is important to understand. At a bank, at Target, at any system right now that is carrying data, if you can hack it, you get into the database, you get into everything. Okay. With the blockchain, what's one of the many revolutionary things about it is, okay, even if you could hack it, you got into the block of transactions that occurred for the last 10 minutes. And by the way, we're 9 years into this. There has never been any block hacked. Okay. And believe me, with where the price of Bitcoin is right now, that's a major honeypot, what they call in technology a honeypot. It's basically begging anybody with skills to get into it, and nobody's been able to get into it. Okay. And frankly, I have spent days in front of these developers and the tech guys explaining to me really what they're doing inside these blocks. And frankly, I don't think it'll ever be able to be hacked. It will blow your mind the level of technology that is taking place. So, where we have seen hacks, and we might as well just address this right now that people are going to ask, where we have seen hacks is in traditional networks. We've seen it in maybe not Coinbase per se, but in some of these other third party that are like exchanges. They're like Bitcoin exchanges or cryptocurrency exchanges that are functioning just like a stock exchange or any of these other traditional environments. Okay, but the blockchain, and this is what's being proven to the developers, is the blockchain is at a whole other level of security than anything we've created yet. Okay, so I want to make it clear that blockchain cryptocurrency has not been hacked yet.
Okay, Aaron, if I can stop you here for a second, and please humor me, Steve. I ask for your patience, everyone. I don't even know what. Okay, you explained the infrastructure, basically the mechanism of transfer, but I don't even know what the hell we're transferring. Are we transferring?
Okay.
What is it? Error? I mean, cryptocurrency. What's a Bitcoin? It's not silver. It's not gold. It's not fiat currency. It's. Pardon the question.
Wait.
What is it?
All right, let's do that. All right, let's jump in there. Let's talk about money. What is money? Steve, what's money? Somebody tell me.
Well, I'll give you the definition of money. It is a commodity or a representation of a commodity that has an accepted value that in order for a transaction to take place, two or more parties have to agree or acknowledge the underlying value of the commodity.
All right. So, I would say that Bitcoin is going to meet that definition. So, let's go through that. Okay, where did money begin? Okay, money began with bartering. Okay,
so we're hey, taking... Aaron.
Yes.
Yeah, let me stop you. You don't need to keep saying okay because it takes away from your time. I just want to give you a helpful hint. No, because you've got so much valuable stuff to say, and we're already, 47 minutes, so that's not a criticism. It's just a helpful suggestion. Just go for it, and then Doug or whoever will interject.
I appreciate that.
One can actually respond to you or should except through us. And if you open up for questions, written questions or done or whatever, that's it. But just save yourself that time because it's a valuable time. Continue, sir.
I appreciate that. Money has been the only value, the only true value that we had at any point, and it was not money, was when we were bartering. And this is coming, and I know that's going to upset a lot of people in your audience. This is coming from a guy that has invested seven figures in gold and silver. Okay, so this isn't a guy that believes just in digital money. I have invested, and I still am invested heavily in gold and silver.
Right, and I want people to understand that, and I said that at the beginning because, I want people to understand this too. I subscribe to the fact if you can't touch it, you don't own it, but the point also is I understand technology is advancing, and what gives greenbacks any credibility is the fact that there's nothing backing that up. So the greater value added, and this is, I want to say this about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, is everyone is going to assign value to it and agree to it, fulfilling, the most important part of any, script or offer or, in this world, a digital byte. It's the value that so exceeds the greenbacks and any paper currency that's got governments basically ordering millions of pairs of giant-shaped, baby-shaped Kimbies, okay? Because this thing is a transform. And a transform means it's a total change. Now, I think it's important that people understand that. Go ahead. That you're not an anti-gold and silver guy, because a lot of people are bailing on their gold and silver. I get the, and I said, you're going to be sorry. So, you know, and let's just deal with what Cliff High is having to say, that, you know, obviously, there's a limited amount of gold and silver, and there are people that are going to take the opportunity when it arises to acquire as much as they can at whatever price they can, and then it will be unavailable for the common man. So, you know,
and
go
I
ahead and deal
that,
with
Steve. Yeah, I, look, everything Steve said, I just agree with, and maybe that's his way of kicking me in the pants, and I'll take this now. We had to get through the formal definition of cryptocurrency, so let's run. And let's be clear about money. Money left an intrinsic value, okay, once we left barter and we began to abstract it. Even silver and gold was an abstraction, okay? I would argue that silver and gold was more of an abstraction of money than what silver and gold is going to be in the future. Let me say it another way. When we get into the new electrics, silver will have more true value than at any other time in its history, okay? But right now, it's still an abstraction of value. As we then moved into paper, we then moved into credit cards, and we have had digital money. In fact, I would argue that we've had a one-world currency for at least 40 years, and it's called the petrodollar, okay?
Agreed.
So what is the difference between digital dollars and Bitcoin? Okay, let's just cut to the chase. The answer is we've been digital, but the money has been controlled. The money has received value because of the sovereign dictate of the government. Okay, they're the only ones who can create the money. Therefore, it has value. They will use the military-industrial complex to enforce said value, okay? And you're not allowed to step outside of that dollar-based system without suffering consequences, okay? Basically, they have had the power of the printing press, okay? They've had the only printing press. And what Bitcoin says is, no, you don't. It says we now can print our own money. We, in a consensus community, can assign it a 19,800 dollar value this morning. Okay, we don't need to go through your banking system. We don't need to go through your financial services. We don't need to support you with all of our fees. Oh, and by the way, we'll send it to whomever we want, whenever we want, instantaneously. And because it's decentralized and it's running on top of the internet, if you want to take it down, you're going to have to shut down the entire internet system and never turn it back on. Why never turn it back on? Because if there's one point, and this gets into networks, if there's one point in the world, if the entire world bans cryptocurrency, and one island nation decides that you can send money to their banking system, the money will arrive at that bank, instantly be into cryptocurrency, and continue to run on top of the net. This is what just happened to China. China, 3 months ago, in the beginning of September, basically said, we're shutting down the ICOs, these companies that are issuing cryptocurrency for their startups, and we're going to, and you're not going to be allowed to raise funds. And so what the companies did said, they said, okay. And they went to Hong Kong. They went to Seoul, Korea, they went to Tokyo, and they went to Singapore, and Bitcoin went from $3,000 when China made that announcement to $19,000 today. And I would submit that if the Chinese government the government that doesn't have a Bill of Rights, the government that can throw you in the gulag, the government that is a communist country, make no mistake, it's communist. If they can't stop Bitcoin, then my attitude is good luck to London, New York, and D.C.
Okay, but now, again, patience, please. I get, okay, I understand what you're saying about the mode, the method, the platform. I understand that. Where I'm having a problem is, whereas there's a difference between currency and money, obviously. And forgive me for going back here, but I'm getting a lot of people, you know, confused. Or fiat currency is cash. It's the petrodollar, as you referenced. It's dollars, pesos, yen, whatever it might be. Whatever you have in your wallet. Okay, but at some point it represents something. Or is Bitcoin just a bunch of excited electrons out there? I mean, what does
Doug, and I appreciate that, and I want to answer that, and we'll work through this. So you're asking the most fundamental question. It's the best question of the night. It's the ultimate question of the night. Because if it's just a phantom, if it's just an illusion, then the joke's on everybody. Okay, so I do appreciate
exactly
that, and I hope to answer that. And so continue to press me until you understand. Because if you don't understand that, and we're all engaged in an illusion, then
exactly. We're at the top of the hour break, so, Steve. In like one sentence, am I too fundamental? Am I off, Steve?
But here's the problem, Doug. Of our generation, it's really tough to wrap your brain around this, okay, because we're so trained and we're like Pavlov's salivating dogs at the trough of the petrodollar, okay?
Got it.
And they've been pulling our chains. But this decentralized, here's the bottom line, is that the decentralization puts contact to contact without them. And I guess, Aaron, one of the questions we'll deal after the break is they're not going to go quietly into the night. So basically what Aaron is saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, is that this breaks the control of basically fiat money, fiat currency, and the only thing that makes fiat currency any good is the exchange rates that central banks set on it. Because what's between red ink? Yeah.
I'll appreciate, and on your break, when we come back, we'll get into exactly how it's going to break them financially, and we're going to answer your question, Doug, about
Superb.
The nature and
All
value
right.
of money.
All right. Stand by, network break, and we'll be right back.